Good morning. My name is Leo Drozdov, and we're at a bit of an awkward phase here in that we don't have a chair yet, but because of the Nevada open meeting rule, we need to make sure we move forward with public comment first. So if you look at the agenda item, item three is election of chair. We'll take public comment now, and I guess we'll just leave it to the forum as a whole to figure out how it wants to respond to any public comment that it hears right now. So I invite anybody in Carson City, and for the folks in Las Vegas, if you want to maybe go around the table and see if anybody wants to make public comment there, that'd be great. All right. Is there anyone in Carson City? Okay. Seeing none, I think maybe what we'll do is, for everybody's benefit, before we get started on agenda item three, we'll go around the room, introduce the forum members, and they can say a little bit anything they want. I'll start with you, Mark.
Sure. My name is Mark Walker. I'm the Dean and Director of Cooperative Extension at the University of Nevada.
Las Vegas? Sorry to interrupt, Mark. If you could mute your, push the little button on your microphone there, and that will mute you guys. And thank you very much.
Good. Mark Walker, Dean and Director of College of Cooperative Extension at the University of Nevada. College of Cooperative Extension is the University of Nevada's outreach arm. We have offices in all counties in the state, and they're staffed with what are called extension educators to help take information produced by researchers and others and make it locally relevant.
I'm Justin Huntington, Associate Research Professor with the Desert Research Institute, and I represent DRI as a whole, and basically DRI provides science to support and develop solutions and monitoring tools related to drought in Nevada, as well as the U.S.
Hi, my name is Bill Elliott. I'm the Environmental Association for Emergency Management. I'm sitting here representing Jim Rice, who's the Director of Department of Public Safety. And our job is to help communities mitigate possible impacts to human property and economic losses from a drought and to respond to issues which may occur. Our job also is to assist communities in the recovery process and to translate some of the FEMA and the Small Business Administration federal language into language that they
And Jason, before you get started, I've been reminded, and we've had a number of meetings in here. It's a great room, but the acoustics are rough, and so I'd ask the folks around the table to speak up a little bit just to make sure the folks in the audience can hear.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. My name is Jason King, and I'm State Engineer and Administrator for the Division of Water Resources. The mission of our division is to protect, manage, conserve, and enhance the safe water resources for its citizens. Besides appropriating and regulating all water statewide except for the Colorado River, our staff measures groundwater levels in over 1,600 sites. We conduct groundwater inventories in almost 60 basins. We measure precip throughout the state, and we also regulate surface water on many streams and creeks.
And as I said, good morning. My name is Leo Drozdov. I'm the Director of the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. Division of State Engineer, Division of Water Resources, Environmental Protection, and other programs, forestry that are in that department. I just wanted to talk a little bit that in addition to what we are doing here with the Nevada Drought Forum, we have represented the governor in Western governor activities. As I think you all know, and as it's spelled out in the executive order, the governor made, as chair of Western Governors, made drought his governor's issue. His chairmanship is coming to a close at the, later on, at the end of this month. And similarly, at the end of this month, the Western Governors folks will release their report and information with regard to their activities. And really what we see is that, if you would, that may be a 50,000-foot level, and the work that we will hopefully do here will take us down to maybe the 10,000-foot level, implement what we can from the Western Governor's efforts, and then put, if you would, more meat on the bones.
My name is John Enslinger. I'm the General Manager of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. SNWA is the wholesale water supplier for unincorporated Clark County, Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, City. In total, we're responsible for the potable water supply for approximately 75% of the state's population.
My name is Lynn Hetrick. I'm Deputy Director of the Department of Agriculture. I'm sitting in for Jim Barbie, who's traveling on state business today. Obviously, the Department of Agriculture is concerned with the viability of agriculture throughout the state of Nevada, and I'm participating.
I'm Doug Boyle. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Geography at the University of Nevada, Reno. I'm also the Nevada State Climatologist. And as the Nevada State Climatologist, I'm responsible for understanding, synthesizing, and really trying to communicate climate-related issues to the people of Nevada.
I'm Jerry Snyder. I'm the Deputy Attorney General representing the Division of Water Resources and the State Engineer. I expect to have little to add as an attorney in the teeth of a lot of people who know what they're talking about.
And I'm Misty Gower with the Department of Environmental Protection.
Great. All right. Well, I think we'll probably heat up as the agenda moves forward, but we'll go to agenda item 3. Don't know if there's any, what interest is out there with regard to chair and vice chair, but I'll open it up.
I would make a motion to nominate you, Leo Drozdov, as the chair of the committee.
I would second that motion.
All right. Are there anybody else interested in doing that? All right. Seeing none, I guess we'll call for that question. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Well, I guess that's that. Thanks. So then we go to the vice chair. Interest there?
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to nominate John Enslinger as vice chair. His agency provides water to 7.5 out of 10 Nevadans. It makes sense to me that he should be a nominee for vice chair.
All right. Is there a second on that?
I second that.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, well then maybe we get back to a bit of normalcy on how you run meetings. So let's go to taking a look at the agenda, and as you can see, I already sort of asked forum members to provide introductions, but we can add to that if we'd like. The plan will be, unless, and I didn't get any information from the public comments, or lack thereof. Typically, I think meetings are where we have public comment at the beginning and the end of a meeting, and at the discretion of the chair, you have the ability to take public comment at, during any and all of the individual agenda topics. But given what we heard today, the plan will be to just take public comment at the end of today's meeting. But I trust everyone's had a chance to look at the agenda, and if there are any suggestions, changes, let me know.
J.
you like a motion for adoption of the agenda?
I would, thank you.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. So as I said, we did go around the table a little bit, but if there's anything more that the individual forum members would like to add, now would be an opportune time. Nothing? Okay. So let's get to the meat of the meeting, the start of it. So Doug, we'll go to you.
Thanks, Leo. The drought is not over, despite the precipitation and cool weather conditions that we've seen over the last few weeks or so. The new drought monitor was just put out this morning, and I put that on this handout, the upper left-hand corner of the first page, dated 9 June 2016. And the conditions really, in terms of the more extreme side of the extreme and exceptional, which are the D4 and D3 conditions, they really haven't changed since mid-April, I think, in the state. Almost half of our state, 49% roughly, is in at least extreme drought. This week, however, the drought monitor did show some relief in the northeastern corner of Elko County, and some of the D2 conditions went to D1. That's due to the recent precipitation in that area. I do expect that the kind of southern part of Humboldt County, Pershing County, and Churchill County will probably see some relief in terms of the drought monitor next week, particularly the D4 condition there that we're seeing over those counties. And again, that's just related to the significant amount of precipitation that we've seen relative to how much they would normally expect in those areas. Received a wide range of reports of wet and abundant vegetation in the rangelands throughout most of the state. And it's actually been an issue in terms of some people wondering why the drought monitor is still showing such extreme conditions, and others who are dependent on kind of longer-term drought issues like water supply, water in the rivers and reservoirs are on the other hand calling for more extreme categorization of drought conditions. So it's a balance that has to be played between short-term drought and long-term drought, which the drought monitor designates as kind of short-term is the next 6 months and long-term is longer than that. The snow drought is a term that has been thrown around quite a bit this year, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, but also in Nevada. Some areas in Nevada, particularly the northwestern portion of the state, received near normal amounts of precipitation, but it came as rainfall rather than snow. And so the seasonal snowpack was significantly reduced and is not available to run off, to produce runoff for the summer months. And this has been an issue in mostly in the Pacific Northwest, but in some parts of Nevada. I put a nice chart under impact of recent storms for Elko. This represents the weather station at Elko itself. The top panel, there are three panels there. The top panel is the air temperature from October 1st to present, so this is the water year, the current water year we're in. And the dark blue line that's jumping around there in the middle, that is the actual recorded daily min and max temperature. And the green in the middle, the green band, is what we would normally expect. And the red is kind of the higher temperatures that have ever been recorded, and the kind of light blue are the cooler temperatures. And what you can see is that this year, this water year, temperatures have generally been warmer. We haven't seen see a bias toward normal or warmer temperatures. And this is true pretty much throughout the state. The reason I showed Elko today is the next panel below, kind of that middle panel, is a cumulative amount of precipitation that's been seen in Elko since the start of the water year, again, October 1st, 2014. The kind of mustard color is what we expect as we move through time, the total accumulation. The dark green is what we have seen. And you can see through April, we were at about roughly 50% of average in Elko. And then from April to present, so that was about 3 inches. We've seen almost 4 inches since April. So almost a doubling of the precipitation in Elko. It's still not quite up to the normal. It's about 90%. But it has been a significant amount of precipitation. We've seen this throughout the state. Reno, in May, the average precipitation was just under half an inch. That's what we normally expect, but we saw an inch. Las Vegas, I think a quarter of an inch. We saw about half of an inch. So just in general, this is it's been a nice wet May, but the rest of the water is dry. And we can see that in the next panel over, percent of average precipitation. For Nevada, most of the area is yellow, orange, or dark red, which is less than 100% of precipitation since October 1st, 2014. But there is this green area in southern Humboldt, Pershing, and Churchill, and even down into Mineral County. So I'll just move along here quickly. It's been warm this year. We did have a cool May, but January, February, and March were warm. Things are going to get warm here in the next few days, and we expect to have warm conditions through the rest of the summer. 2014 was the warmest for the state average in recorded history in 120 years. The warm temperatures exacerbate the drought. We don't have the supply that we would normally expect of water. With the warmer temperatures, people want to use more water. Plants, lawns need more water. Evaporation rates are higher. We flip the page over. The last two things I wanted to quickly go over are just what are we looking at for the future. So the two plots of kind of North America here, climate outlook. The one on the left is the precipitation outlook for 3 months starting in May. These aren't updated until next Thursday. So these were made May 21st. So these are, represent June, July, and August of 2015. It's the forecast of what the Climate Prediction Center thinks will happen. And Nevada is, except for the upper northeast corner, is completely white. And white means there's an equal chance for normal precipitation, which we don't expect a lot of precipitation June, July, and August. Panel to the right. In terms of temperature, this is temperature forecast. Nevada is orange to red, and really those are just higher probabilities that temperature is going to be above normal. So the take-home message is the forecast is warmer than normal, and it's going to be dry. The last thing I want to do is just say something really quickly about El Nino. There's been a lot of talk about El Nino. The forecast from the CPC, the Climate Prediction Center, came out just this morning. I didn't get a chance to update this section, but essentially it's the same. El Nino is heating up. It's looking to be a really strong El Nino at the moment. There's a 90% chance that the El Nino conditions will continue through the summer. And the update is there's a greater than 85% chance now that it will last through the winter of 2015. And that's really the important part for kind of the western U.S. is what happens in terms of El Nino during the winter. It's not so much the summer that matters. So if these conditions continue in the winter, we generally expect to see more precipitation in the southern part of California and to some degree southern part of Nevada. However, there is some evidence, some support for a strong El Nino like this to enhance the chances of getting more monsoonal flow precipitation this summer in the Great Basin, which includes Nevada, of course. So we might see some more summertime precipitation in Nevada if this El Nino persists.
So what you're saying is we need to have more drought meetings, and then maybe we'll have more
precipitation.
Yeah, have them on the day these outlooks are put in, because that makes it really fun to get it all together.
It's an interesting time. You know, I was talking with my counterpart in Oklahoma, who is coming out for the Western Governors meeting and has done a lot of work like we have in their state. And of course, as they're talking about drought and drought planning, if you followed the news, of course, you would know that Oklahoma has seen 21 inches of precipitation in like a day and a half and has had just amazing flooding conditions. And I think that is actually part of what we're going to end up talking about. It precip never comes in the way you want it, whether you get too much, too little, in any event. Are there any questions for
you? And I've asked this, I think, before of Doug. I know sometimes a strong El Nino doesn't necessarily translate into a huge snow-packed winter in the Sierras, but thinking of the Colorado River and the Rockies, does that translate into more likely a large winter on the Rockies?
The connection to El Nino in the Rockies, it's not my area of expertise.
It's not necessarily my area of expertise either, but I've heard the question answered before. And the answer, essentially, El Nino rides a line right down the middle of the continent. North of the line, it's wetter. South of the line, it's drier. And so it's, you know, in the Rockies, it's where exactly is that oscillation going to, you know, produce the line? The last time we saw one of these in 2011, we got a great winter, but we've seen El Niños before where it had, you know, sub-average effects on the snowfall in the Rocky Mountains. So I'm sure you can get a climatologist to give you a longer version of 50-50, but that's my version of 50.
That sounds like what we've seen this year. Sometimes it produces and sometimes it doesn't.
We can have huge years here and we can have some fun years.
Okay. Of course, the key to getting more precip in the Rockies is to schedule a flight through Denver.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Doug, you used the term snow drought, too. I think that's an interesting one because I know that, you know, when it rains, people forget that there is any kind of a drought because they believe that our water supplies are being replenished. Is that something that you think is going to creep into more common use? I mean, it's an important distinction, especially in the Rocky Mountains, given that most of our water supply really is due to snow, right, rather than these several inches of rainfall that we receive at a time when it's great for plants, but not so great for replenishing reservoirs.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, if you were to look at some of the stations in the Sierra, they saw plenty of rainfall over this May as well. But it didn't double, you know, it wasn't double what was normally expected.
Yeah.
Lake Tahoe, for example, is back up to the natural rim, but it's still expected to fall another 2 feet, I think, by the end of the summer.
Thanks, Doug. Okay, so then we'll go to John.
Great. Thanks, Leo. So I think the agenda asked me to speak a little bit about the Colorado River, Lake Mead, and what we've been doing in southern Nevada generally. When I talk about the Colorado River, before I get to the hydrology, the first thing I usually like to talk about is our neighbors, the region that is supported by the Colorado River. Because even though this is the Nevada Drought Forum, the Colorado River is the lifeline of the Southwest. It provides water to 7 different states and 2 more states in the country of Mexico, Sonora and Baja. And if you look at those 7 domestic states and the 2 states in Mexico as a single economic unit, those 9 states are the 5th largest economy in the world. They are a larger economy than Great Britain or France and are just behind Germany. So oftentimes we think about drought very parochially. What's going on in our backyard? You know, what's going on with my well even? But stepping back and considering Nevada's place in the region, we see our place as a partner with these other seven states and Mexico in trying to come up with regional solutions to protect this economy. And people are paying very close attention to this. We've just gone through a major bond refunding, and in order to do that, we had to sit down with Moody's, we had to sit down with Standard & Poor's, and in going through that process, 80% of the questions those rating agencies asked us were about the drought and the security of our water supply, not about our balance sheet. And thankfully, and I'll get into more of the detail later, in Southern Nevada at least, we have been proactive enough through conservation, through resources, through facilities, that the rating agencies really liked our answers. In fact, Moody's upgraded us from a AA2 to a AA1 based primarily upon our community's ability to weather ongoing drought conditions. We've seen throughout the basin, obviously everybody's pretty familiar with the situation in California. You've seen billions of dollars in impacts to the Central Valley and impacts to the cities. I was in Los Angeles this week, and the director of East Bay Municipal District told me their demands are down 50 MGD year to date, which is tremendous for water conservation. That's not so good for a utility's revenue supply if you're going to, you know, be making bond payments and, you know, buying electricity and things like that. So balancing out conservation and the necessary revenue supplies for utilities is an ongoing economic challenge produced by the drought. So getting back to the river itself. Over the last, we have 108 years of recorded hydrology on the river, going back to 1906. And over that period of time, the river has produced 15 million acre feet on average every year. That's good, except for the fact that there are 16.5 million acre feet in legal entitlements and 2 million acre feet a year in evaporation. So even if you look at a normal year on the river, you have a 3.5 million acre foot hole in the system before you start factoring in climate change and before you start factoring in ongoing drought conditions. And that all assumes that we're lucky enough to get 20th century hydrology again. Because even though we have 108 years of recorded flows, we have a pretty good idea what this river system has looked like for the last 1,200 years. Through reconstructed tree ring records, we now know that the 20th century was one of the two wettest centuries in the last 1,200 years on the Colorado River plateau and in the Rocky Mountains. So forgetting the current drought, just saying we have 17th century hydrology. We're in a position on the river among the seven states with the country of Mexico where we have to be prepared for the river to produce less water than it has in the past, than it did in the 20th century, which is obviously a momentous challenge because all of our laws, all of our institutions, all of our economies are built upon the assumption that we're going to see that amount of water again. And this isn't something that we have probably decades to adapt to. This is something we're going to have to be adapting to in a very expedient manner. Just in the last 15 years, we talk about the drought in California, we talk about the drought in Nevada, and most people talk about it as a four-year drought. The Colorado River has been in drought for 15 years. We saw the driest year in recorded history in 2002 with just 25% of normal precipitation or inflow into Lake Powell, and we saw the driest back-to-back years in recorded history in 2012 and 2013. In combination, this drought has driven down Lake Mead levels by about 130 feet, so we're now sitting about 3 feet away from the first ever shortage declaration by the Secretary of Interior. And this year, the Colorado was very similar to Nevada. April was abysmal. There was a single week in April where the projected inflow into Lake Powell went down by 750,000 acre feet because it got warm enough in April that that snow was simply sublimating and flowing directly from solid to gas. May, we got a reprieve, very much like I think Nevada and parts of California got in the form of rainfall. So that's gone back up. We're now looking at, if you look at the 24-month study that the Bureau of Reclamation does every month for Colorado River operations, we're now in a best-case scenario of Lake Mead getting into the mid-1060s by next summer. Our upper intake is at 1050, so we're going to be within 20 feet next summer of losing the ability to operate our upper intake in Lake Mead. A worst-case scenario, if we were to see warming conditions and the deterioration of the hydrology before the end of the year, is Lake Mead could actually get down into the 1050s by next summer. So this is not a situation where we see any readily available relief for Lake Mead in the future. Obviously, if El Nino were to persist through the winter months of 2015 and early 2016, that would be a blessing, and hopefully we could get some water out of that. And so just to leave the river and the context of it, I started by talking about the regional importance of the river, and I'll leave it with a very parochial Nevada-centric importance of the river. The Colorado River supplies 90% of the water for 75% of our state's population. There is no way for me to overstate the importance of protecting the river, managing its resources wisely so that it is a sustainable resource for not only our population base, but for the population throughout the river basin. So I'll leave the river and move generally into what our response has been. So like I said, this has been going on for 15 years for us, and we thankfully began adapting pretty early. We had always done conservation through the 1990s. We had a pretty aggressive conservation plan, but in 2002, when we got that 25% hydrologic year, we kicked things into overdrive. And looking back over the last 13 years now, Southern Nevada has reduced its per capita water consumption by 40% in that 13-year period, and hats off to our community for stepping up to the plate to do that. In aggregate, rather than in per capita terms, our net water use off of the Colorado River is down 33% over the last 13 years, and that's in the same time period that our population increased by 25%. And I feel that I'm on safe ground in saying that there's no other municipal area in the United States, and to my knowledge, not in the world, that can boast those kinds of conservation numbers simultaneous with those kinds of population growth numbers. And we do it largely by eliminating outdoor use. Now, don't get me wrong, there are good reasons to do indoor conservation. You save electrical power, save on chemical costs, but in Southern Nevada, saving indoors, taking shorter showers, it's not going to save you any water. And that's because everything that hits a drain in Las Vegas is recycled, put back into Lake Mead, and we can take it back out. So because we have this return flow credit methodology, because of all the disadvantages Nevada has, you know, being the driest state in the union, getting the shortest straw on the Colorado River negotiations, our legal entitlement to the river amongst those other partners I talked about is 1.8% of the total legal entitlement. But the big advantage we have is our geographic proximity upstream of Hoover Dam. That allows us to have this essentially closed loop of indoor water use, and when I talk later about facilities, it allows us to secure our water delivery mechanisms in a way that simply aren't available to other municipalities. So because indoor use doesn't extend our supplies, we focus extensively on eliminating and reducing outdoor consumption, and the flagship, if you will, program of our outdoor conservation initiatives is the Water Smart Landscape program. To date, Water Smart Landscape has paid our community $220 million to take out turf, because it's all in the spray irrigation is what really drives outdoor water use. So we started the program at, I think, 50 cents a square foot. At one point, we got up to paying $2 a square foot for removal. The program currently sits at $1.50 a square foot. And in aggregate numbers, you look at it. In 2002, we used 325,000 acre feet of water off the Colorado River. That's a consumptive use number or net depletion number. Last year, we used 220,000. So we've already conserved enough to weather secretarily imposed shortages, and we've created a block of water that we can actually do banking with. We don't simply forego the use of that extra 80,000 acre feet of water that we have a legal entitlement to. The last couple of years, we've been banking it with the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. So we've driven down our aggregate use, and just for, you know, I guess it's not a visual, so I can't show it to you, but as a way of understanding exactly how much grass we've taken out, if you were to take a 18-inch piece of sod and roll it around the earth, we've taken out enough sod that that strip of grass can now get 70% of the way around the plant. That's a lot of grass for us to have taken out. So done a lot on conservation, on banked supplies. We've been very progressive and moved a lot of programs forward to bank resources for times of need. We've had the first of its kind on the Colorado River Basin banking arrangement with the state of Arizona, where we pay them, I believe to date we've paid $180 million for them to take their unused water off the river, inject it into their aquifers, and then when the day comes when we need it back, they can pump it out of their aquifers and we take a piece of their Colorado River apportionment out of Lake Mead. I mentioned our bank in California, where we've done similar things with the Metropolitan Water District to give them water when they need it and know that we can get it back in the future. The three partners, Metropolitan Water District, Central Arizona Project, and SMWA, have invested in a number of system efficiency programs to get more water into Lake Mead, and we've even, for the first time, under the terms of Minute 319, made a $10 million investment in the country of Mexico to help encourage them and allow them to make investments in efficiencies, canal linings, laser leveling the fields, and in return for that, the country of Mexico actually leaves a portion of their treaty water in Lake Mead that the three investing entities have access to. So if you look at all those programs in total, we have 1.5 million acre feet of water that we have banked around the region and in our own aquifers. We've injected, as Jason knows, about 330,000 acre feet of water in the Las Vegas aquifer as well. So when you have 1.5 million acre feet in the bank and you're using 220,000 a year, that's a nice buffer for drought moving into the future and a security blanket for our community to know that we have the resources available to support the existing population and a reasonable amount of growth into the future. So the last piece I'll talk about is our facilities, because legal entitlements and bank supplies and conservation, that's all well and good, but if you can't pump the water out of the lake, none of that is going to do you a whole lot of good. So as our system is currently configured, we have two pumping stations and two intakes. They essentially pump from elevations 1050 and 1000. And for decades, we thought those facilities were completely secure. But when the lake goes down 130 feet in 13 years, and you're 78 feet away from not being able to pump 90% of the water supply for the majority of the state's population, you start making contingency plans. So what we've done in 2006, we began moving forward with the design and ultimately construction of a third intake into Lake Mead. That intake is a 3-mile tunnel literally underneath the lake, 20 feet in diameter with the intake riser, 100-foot intake riser that is actually in place now and is located in the river channel where the Colorado River was before the construction of Hoover Dam, which is another way of saying you can't go any lower in Lake Mead than we've located this intake riser. In December, the tunnel boring machine intersected with that intake riser, which was a major milestone in the project, and we look to have that project up, operational, and producing water for Southern Nevada by late fall, early winter, probably late September, early October is when we'll be able to begin pulling water from that intake. And the location of that intake is critical because it can pull water from elevation 860. And the reason that elevation is critical is because if, and heaven forbid we get to this level, if Lake Mead were to continue to fall and we get to elevation 900, that's the elevation where the Bureau of Reclamation can no longer release water from behind Hoover Dam. So another blessing of being upstream of the dam is that we can construct facilities that are essentially guaranteed to have 40 feet of water over them because we'll have Hoover sitting there as an impoundment which can no longer release water downstream. So the completion of the third intake, which is an $817 million project financed wholly by the ratepayers of the Las Vegas Valley and Boulder City. We don't have a single dollar of state money. We don't have a single dollar of federal money. Our rate base has stepped up to make these facilities possible. So that one will be operational in the fall, but as the engineers around the table, I don't know if we have any more than just Jason, we'll tell you, pumps push, right? They don't suck. So it's great to have an intake, but you also need a pumping station that has water over the pumps. And our lowest pumping station right now is at elevation 1,000. So to match up a facility that can pump at that 860 level, our board in December authorized us to move forward with a low lake level pumping station. This is another $650 million facility that will take about a year to design, about 4 years to construct. So our capital plan is to have these facilities done, operational, and ready to pump at even the worst hydrologic conditions by 2020 in order to protect the citizens of Southern Nevada. And that's really all I have, but I'm certainly happy to answer questions from members of the forum or the public or however you'd like to handle it, Chairman.
Okay, thanks. Very informative. First, we'll go to the forum members. Any questions for John?
Sure. Do you have a target for, you're talking about removing turf to reduce outside watering demand. Do you have a target for how much more of that you want to accomplish? And do you have a sense of how much more you can accomplish with just removing turf?
We do. Our best estimate is that so far we've achieved about 50% of what is reasonably available. And by that, there's going to be parts of town where no amount of incentive is probably high enough. But based upon the demographics of what we've done so far and aerial imagery of what is left, we think we're about halfway there.
Is it all private residences or is it public lands too? Do you have city and county parks and things like that?
It's primarily single-family residents and golf courses have participated extensively. Every golf course in Southern Nevada is on a water budget, so you get a certain, I think it's 6.5 acre-feet per acre of playable area, and other than that, you start paying a lot more for water. So the golf courses have participated heavily in the rebate program, but it's everything. It's commercial. Schools have participated. UNLV has participated. No federal land, to my knowledge, has participated, but we've had a pretty diverse response from across the community.
Has it created any kind of a niche industry and, in turf out, different kind of landscaping in, with people who are selling that as a
one of the kinds of expertise available?
I'm not sure in terms of whether it's, created a, micro industry or something, but one part of the program that we do is we certify landscape companies as water smart landscapers. So they can come in, they can take a class, they can learn about the program, because you can't simply tear out, 500 square feet of turf and dump in rock. That would not get you the rebate, because one of the things we have to do, Las Vegas, it gets hot, we have mountains on three sides of us, we have to avoid the heat island effect, so you actually have to put in plants that when mature, not immediately, but when the plants are mature, they need to cover 50% of the landscapable area. But those can be trees, shrubs, things that will be on a drip emitter and will drastically reduce the amount of water. But if the landscapers come in and learn all about the program, learn what they need to do to comply with it and get their customer the rebate as quickly as possible, then we certify them as a water smart contractor. And I'd say 10-15% of the companies in town have taken that step. So maybe it does go to your question of a niche industry.
With regard to the banking arrangements you have, are those expandable? In other words, can you, either on a particularly good year, bank in terms of conservation, bank additional water, or can you, how flexible are they going forward? Are they created so that in a particularly bad year, someone can buy water from LA, and somehow do the credit work the other way?
Yeah, well, I guess first part of that is really, are they flexible year to year? And they are, as long as you're not pushing up against your cap. These banking arrangements are governed under federal law by what's called the Interstate Offstream Banking Regulations. And the current environmental compliance, the current NEPA cap on the banking program is 1.2 million acre feet. Under that program, I know I said 1.5, but there are different, that's intentionally created unused apportionment. Some of the stuff we have is in different categories and doesn't apply to that cap. So as long as our banks with Arizona and California are well below that 1.2, so as long as we're below that, if we all of a sudden had 100,000 unused instead of 80,000 unused, we could easily bank the 100,000 with LA. In terms of getting it back, there are some notice provisions that we have to give to get it back, but those are an annual thing. We can pretty readily give notice to both Arizona and California and pull the water back out. I don't know if you meant by go the other way, if they can bank with us. Certainly the legal framework and mechanisms are in place to allow that if we wanted to, but we don't have you have to have a direct need for the water in the year you bank it, so we don't have that right now. So we have the legal ability, but probably not the conditions preceding to do it.
My question was, it was entirely hypothetical.
Okay.
With respect to that.
Anything else for John? All right. Well, Jason, maybe I'll go to you then.
Okay. Just some brief comments, and really they go to current conditions of our reservoirs, talk about some of the deliveries, and then a few observations on groundwater levels. Starting out with reservoir storage nearest here, Lake Tahoe, right now the pool elevation is right at the rim, which is 62.23, and I think it's a 62.22.95. So you will see that Lake Tahoe, in terms of its percent storage, is 0% right now. Obviously, you go up to Lake Tahoe, and I'm not trying to insult anybody's intelligence, and you see a massive lake over 1,600 feet deep. But in terms of water that's impounded behind that very small dam, it's zero. Okay. Continuing with the Truckee, just some quick numbers. Donner Reservoir is 73% of capacity. Crossers at 27%, Boca 14%, Stampede 17%, and Independence at 94%, so a lot of upstream storage on the Truckee. In terms of what that means in terms of percentages. You have to actually look at what the storage values are from for those reservoirs, but it's significant. Moving quickly to the Carson River, Lahontan, many of you, if you've driven by it, all of the 10% is a pond. It's really in poor shape, and that's where Governor Sandoval, I think, started out his journey on this route. Moving to the Walker, Bridgeport is at 14%, Topaz is at 22% of capacity, Weber Reservoir is 53%, and Walker Lake is at about 40% on that Walker Reservoir. The Humboldt right patch at the end of the system is at 3%. The Humboldt, especially the lower end, has really been hit hard by this drought. We've been working considerably with all those water users, and as you heard John talk about, Lake Mead is somewhere between 37 and 39% of capacity right now. Jumping to, in terms of deliveries on these river systems, back at the Truckee River, it's my understanding that some of the irrigation ditches are flowing right now, but they are soon to be cut off. They were flowing as a result of the heavy rains we got in May. And as soon as those ditches are cut off, only some of the Truckee Mountain Water Authority and the Pyramid Lake Bayou Tract will be getting deliveries off of the Truckee River. Carson River, snow melt runoff is the worst on record. Again, May has helped everybody around here, so some people are getting deliveries, but they're very senior in time, curtailing very much sooner than normally. In the new project, Fallon, Truckee Carson Irrigation District, they began the season anticipating a 20% delivery to the farmers. It fell to 17% because of the warm weather we got and the no precip. After May, that's jumped back up to 21%, so went from 2017 to 21. The farmers are cutting and baling now, and that precip did help them get a decent first cutting. But they do anticipate cutting off all the farmers by July 1 in the irrigation district. In terms of deliveries on the Walker River on the East Fork, it was anticipated they would be delivering 4% of the decreed water rights, and on the West Fork, 3%. So, again, next to nothing. The Humboldt River, our office is very involved with the delivery of water on the Humboldt River. And the upper Humboldt, as Doug had talked, again, we got some really good precipitation in May. And our water supervisor has said that they're delivering about 50% of the decreed rights on the upper. Again, on the lower, it's next to nothing. So the lower Humboldt River is 0% this year, and about 0% last year, and 10% the previous year. The system is so dry, you just can't even push the water to get it through the lower system because of the soil conditions. It just isn't getting there. Jumping real quickly to groundwater levels, as I mentioned earlier, we measure over 1,600 well sites ourselves within the division, and we also collect over another 1,600 water levels throughout the state. And I think the take-home point in terms of drought and the groundwater state, by and large, is that the groundwater is holding up fine in those groundwater basins. Yes, we're seeing some lowering of the water table, but it's not unreasonable. We're seeing 1, 2, 3 feet a year. A lot of water is stored, so you don't see those great declines. Now, there are some exceptions to that statement. We have some basins that are over-appropriated, over-pumped, and then with these drought conditions, we are seeing water levels that make that raise your eyebrows, where we're seeing 5 feet and more. A couple of basins south and east of here, Smith and Mason Valley, in the Walker drainage is of major concern to our office. We've seen unprecedented water level declines. Well, that may rain by about 281% of normal precip to those basins, so that was great news to those farmers. But by and large, the groundwater tables in groundwater basins are holding up fine during this four-year drought. Now, again, as we've all talked about, the scary part is whether or not we're in the fourth year of a four-year drought, or the fourth year of a 10-year drought. That's all I have.
Are there any questions for Jason? All right. So I think we'll go to agenda item 7, and I guess I wanted to start this one by making a few observations. And again, we do have a bit of a plan about what we need to get accomplished, which are spelled out in agenda items 8 and 9. But to start with, and I know that several of you have had this issue, you know, the good news here is that there's a lot of interest in this topic throughout the state, and we've I know that I've been contacted, I know the governor's office has, and again, I know that some of you have, about people wanting to be involved, people wanting to be included, people wanting to be a member. And so, you know, the charge here, or the trick, is to figure out a way to make sure that everybody, in fact, is included, but do so in a way that we don't have a sort of an unwieldy 40-person forum. And like I said, some of that will, some of the ideas that we have about moving forward are having sort of interim sector meetings and the like. But I did want to make the point, and would like to take some discussion on it with regard to involvement, because we do want to, I mean, this meeting is more setting the agenda and the like, but we do want to make sure that there is robust involvement by various sectors that are important, you know, agriculture and municipal water users and, you know, mining companies and the like. So guess I'll stop with that for right now, and like I said, give folks an opportunity to weigh in terms of ways to get robust involvement and do so in a way that we can actually manage with a group that is charged with hearing from them and providing recommendations moving forward. And if there aren't, like I said, I do plan to, we do have some ideas about interim sector meetings that we'll discuss in agenda topic 9.
Well, Leo, I mean, one of the things that Extension is doing right now is we have some funding from the Southwest Regional Climate Hub that's funded, that's supported by the USDA, and they've given us a modest amount of funding to carry out some drought workshops. And as part of that, what we're doing is we've been to Gardnerville, Lovelock, Fallon, and Urington so far, and we're trying to, at the end of those, not just talk about as the latest approach to improved irrigation efficiency or something like that. We're reserving time at the end to have kind of listening sessions where people talk about the facilitated sessions where people talk about, you know, what's on their mind in terms of their need for technical assistance, financial assistance, the directions for future research and things like that. And I think that's it's a pretty modest showing so far of people, because not everybody comes to these meetings, but in terms of agricultural people, they've come up with some interesting topics so far. I know that the state engineer's office conducted a similar set of listening sessions about a year ago, right? So there's an inventory there. They're both in draft form. But I know that our own people in northern Nevada and southern Nevada, in Reno and Las Vegas, are working on issues related to water conservation and water management, particularly in urban areas. And they're coming up with, I think, some interesting things, too, in terms of what people want to know more about. And so I would offer the results of things like that as a way for this forum to understand what people throughout the state are actually thinking about in terms of drought and drought planning.
I agree.
I guess I'll pitch in a little bit, and I may be skipping ahead on the agenda a little bit, but what I'm really trying to get to is, I think the question you're asking is in terms of, you know, what the role of this forum and, you know, there are additional members needed on this forum, or how do we get, you know, the right amount of information from all the different sectors, you know, throughout the state involved in this. And I think if you go to the executive order itself, I know the next agenda is the drought summit, but you got, you know, the executive order says we have to have a drought summit in September. So we're in mid-June. That's 90 or 100 days from now, and a report in November, you know, another 60-some days after that. So rather than trying to, debate and maybe come up with a one-size-fits-all perfect drought forum, my support or idea, I guess, would be that, you know, this group of people goes to the constituents or ask the constituents to come to us, and I think that's what Leo gets at in these sector meetings, to drive towards the summit and the final report, because that report probably isn't the end of this journey, right? That may be, okay, here's what we need to do thereafter, and then maybe this group looks a little bit different than that. So that's kind of a long-winded way of saying I don't think debating additional seats at the table is probably a good use of our time in the next 9 years.
I appreciate that, and I do think I agree with you that as we finish these topics, agenda items 7, 8, 9, I think there'll be, you know, at least a better sense of what we, you know, what we think makes sense to try to get something done in a meaningful way. But by no means should they be considered sort of a done deal. I mean, I think we wanted to make sure that there's something to start with, but the point of these meetings is to make sure that they make sense or add, subtract as need be. Okay, I think what I would like to do is, John mentioned the executive order, just touch on a few of these items that are in the therefore section. Maybe ask Gus if you and your folks maybe want to come up and talk about what Buildings and Grounds has done on item 3. And if you would introduce yourselves before you speak for the record, that'd be great.
I'm Gus Nunez. I'm the administrator of the Public Works Division. I was main council overseas as a deputy administrator with PNG. And we submitted a report of where we're at in our facilities that we, PNG, manages throughout the state, mostly general office buildings and what we're doing in those areas. Tom can provide a report, as a progress report as to where we're at with respect to the district.
Yeah, good morning. I'm Tom Federici, the deputy administrator for BNG. And toward that, fulfilling the goals of the drought forum, we have begun an inventory of our properties, about 80 properties total in Carson City, Las Vegas, and Reno. What we do is we provide irrigation services for the various landscaping at around those buildings. Some are not landscaped, but of those facilities, we've, not just because of this drought forum, but we've always tried to maintain the most efficient type of watering schedule that is in cooperation with all of the various administrations that provide water. We try to limit our watering to small times or short times on cycle times, and we try to do it at the times of the day during the early morning hours and the late night hours when evaporation is the minimal. And we've gone back and adjusted our sprinkler times so that we're decreasing those amount of times to the minimum that we can do. And most of them are around a 8 to 10 minute cycle time. So in shaded areas, we actually go to a 5 minute cycle time. In the buildings themselves, we've done an inventory of all of the buildings to find out what types of plumbing fixtures are in those buildings and what we can do to increase the or retrofit those fixtures with low consumption devices. Now, most of the time, you can't just change out the faucet. You have to change out the whole fixture. Like a water closet, you have to change out the whole fixture. You can't just change out the flush valve. So what we're doing, we currently have a total inventory that we've supplied of all of our fixtures, and we're currently trying to update that to find out where we have to go. If we do have to replace those fixtures, they are fairly expensive change out, so we have to work within the budgets that we have. But we have completed the initial inventory of all of our facilities.
Great. Are there any questions for
Gus or Tom?
There's just one additional item just for the committee information, the form information. We also managed from our lake, Walmart Reservoir Water System, which is the only source of water supply to Story County in the Virginia City area, and summer demand for Carson City area. We are working very closely with those entities. Marlette Lake this winter did not recharge it. That can happen for quite a while. Usually we get all the way up to the rim. Right now we're about, usually spilling over the dam. Right now we're only about 2 feet below the dam. We don't even know if we are going to be yet. By the time the pumping season arrives and we need to pump out of that lake, we may be below, but we try to keep it never to go three feet below the rim. That also protects what the program for the Department of Wildlife has with respect to their collection of their fish eggs to supply their fisheries. And we're already, as a result of warmer weather and lower water levels, we're starting to experience some algae blooms up at on that lake. So we're very concerned about the preservation of that resource there. And as water level drops, you'll be introducing additional vegetation into that, potentially into that lake, which can create also another water quality issues, which is going to have to be handled at the plant. So we are definitely in discussions looking at our own procedures and what we're going to do this summer, and also talking with Carson City and Story County. It would most likely not be our preference to pump any water this year out of Marlette Lake, just to rely on the Hobart and the East Slope. But we'll see how that goes and how the weather through the summer.
Great. So I appreciate knowing all that, and I don't want to keep you here any longer. As you heard, the forum's going to contemplate having interim meetings leading up to the actual summit in September. So I think we will find a way to stay in touch with you to see if there is any updates you would like to provide, you know, at any and all of those interim meetings based on what you just said, based on that this is an ongoing effort.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
If I may.
Yeah.
Given that Virginia City relies so heavily upon Marlette Lake, do they have a backup reserve plan for their water, or do they have groundwater? Where is Virginia City going? No, right now we're hoping that there's two sources of water up there. You have Marlette Lake, which is on the top of it. Then you have what we call the East Slope, which is Hobart and a number of seven catchments that collects spring and surface runoff into the system. And right now, through the winter, since we stopped pumping in, we stopped pumping around October, November last year, the only source of water to Virginia City is coming off of the East Slope. Fortunately, the surface runoff is almost none right now, it's very minimal. And those catchments, what we're experiencing is whatever it can be provided by the spring action that we get at those catchments, and which is diminishing at this point. So we're also in the process of improving all those catchments. We started last year with upgrading all those catchments to basically improve the resources that they haven't been touched since the 30s. So we're going through, trying to go through a lot for all those catchments. And actually, if you look at the volume of water, the East Slope actually provides 70% of the water versus more or less about 30%.
So you anticipate that that's going to be able to last through the summer? I know one of the issues that we heard when we went to the governor's forum in California on drought, Jason was there and I was there, was that they are literally hauling water in tank trucks in the cities in California. And that kind of gets, that was my concern, is there going to be enough actual water flows to sustain Virginia City through the summer?
Right now we're meeting all their demands. As a matter of fact, at Red House, which is what we call the catchment, which is where the surface water comes in and we put it in a flume and pipe it over to the tanks and then deliver water to both entities. We're getting a little bit of spillover that's going on now, which goes on down to Washington Lake, which I'm sure you've seen what that looks like. But anyhow, because basically right now that's all they can take. If they had some additional, they could develop additional storage, we could basically give them a little bit more water right now. That's going to diminish here as summer comes.
There's no way to bank that water that's running.
We don't have a way to store it, and right now they don't have any additional capacity for storing beyond what we've got right now. So fortunately, we're seeing some of the resources go by because they can't handle it. We're giving them all the water that that they can handle right now. Unfortunately, we'll see how that goes on here once July comes around. Things will probably start changing quite a bit and into the fall.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And as I said, if there's information that you want to relay to the forum throughout, because it is sort of changing as we speak, please let us know, and we'll find ways to make sure that you are given opportunities to provide that information. Appreciate that you're here.
I have one question.
Yeah.
So have you actually seen an algae bloom at Marlette Lake, or are you just concerned that
we're
you might?
We're beginning to see some signs of an algae bloom at Marlette Lake, yeah. We usually get 1 to 2 feet of ice up there. This year it didn't freeze. The lake is not frozen.
And to rectify that, we're looking at aeration right now, but that does take a little while to get going, both Hobart and Marlette.
Okay. Thank you.
Dylan, maybe I'll go to you right now, and maybe you can talk about 6 and 7 with perhaps an eye towards the report that the forum's responsible for.
So some of the things that the Division of Emergency Management does is we're in the mitigation and then the consequence management and then the recovery portions of whatever disaster there is out there. And under the threat hazard identification risk assessments that we perform every year for communities, drought is number 2. Just behind the earthquake, drought is number 2 concern for communities. Now, what we've been doing is we've been working with Doug Ball, our state climatologist, folks from the Division of Water Resources. We've actually worked with our federal partners in Farm Service Agency. We got Clint Coble back here from the Farm Service Agency to determine, one, what is the situation, and to report out what the impacts are, and we're on a 24/7 response posture in case any community is impacted by the drought to the point where they need some resources. We also ensure that they have adequate planning for droughts. Their emergency response plans, their drought plans contain contingency plans for that. And we've done a questionnaire that went out to all of the water resources. We've got about 70 responses back from water purveyors, state agencies, federal agencies, but mainly from municipal water supplies and some of the smaller purveyors. We got a pretty good representative response, and there's concern out there, but they, and many of the metropolitan municipal water supplies have enacted certain drought responses just to do some mitigation. But the groundwater has been resilient to the drought so far, and that's what we've seen. We've done some conference calls with emergency managers, tribes, and the water folks in the past, and we also put together drought situation reports. We do a drought situation report on a monthly basis, not just looking at what the water situation is, but whether or not we're seeing more wildfires. Are there communities and industries at risk? So I think that's something that we probably need to continue to do. Some of the things that we have done and collecting some of this information is, what are some of the resources out there? And from a state perspective, there's, you know, we don't have a state pool fund just specifically for drought, but from a federal perspective, there's a lot of that will mitigate impact from a farming perspective and a small business perspective if they are impacted because they can't truck the different the cattle out, or if there's not enough snowpack. How does that impact the ski shops? So you'd be surprised at how many businesses are secondarily impacted by the good water. Those are some of the things that we've done. But our main job right now is to assess, ensure that people are prepared, and then be prepared to respond.
So, appreciate that. My understanding is that you've received, from the state agencies, you've received the information that you need to, but on the municipals, you're still receiving information?
We're still receiving information. We got about 35. You have to understand that, too, is that we got a list of water purveyors, and many of them are very small. There are 14 people. I think the law says if you have more than 14 people, we're on the water purveyors list. So many of them are small. We got a good representative of rural and larger municipality water suppliers and many of the different communities. So I think we got a pretty good representative amount, and we're actually going to give that information to Southern Nevada Water Authority for more comprehensive report.
So this is going to be something for the forum members. This is going to be something that we'll need an action on. My understanding is that because some of these smaller water providers are, you know, they're trying, and we appreciate that. Again, this was just a request that there's a, if you would, a draft that DEM may have with regard to current actions of local, state, and federal entities. The executive order called for a report to be prepared by June 15th. My understanding is that there's arguably a draft ready, but the preference would be to give these folks a little bit more time to come in and perhaps approve the report, or provide a draft report to the forum to be approved. That if we do have a sector meeting in July, is that what you're looking for?
Absolutely. Yes.
So that would be something that we would need action from the forum to basically say, okay, we'll expect a draft in early July, and then the forum can act on it at a subsequent meeting, most likely the July meeting.
I made the motion that we would approve that item.
Is there a second? But any further discussion? Great.
So, we don't want to short circuit that. Are there any questions for Bill in general about the work that they've done?
I'll just follow up with some work that DRI is conducting in partnership with DEM, and that is assessment of drought resiliency in rural northern Nevada areas, led by Dr. Greg Pohl. And basically, it's to evaluate the drought resiliency analysis, ongoing analysis, and conduct additional analysis on small communities in northern Nevada. And basically, this includes communities north of Highway 50, including Lovelock, Winnemucca, Battle Mountain, Carlin, Elko, Spring Creek, Windover, Austin, Eureka, and Ely. So that analysis is going on now, and I think it's going to be completed about 8 months.
Great. One thing I wanted to add, and thank you very much, is that we actually we have responded to communities who have had water difficulties. Walker Lake, in particular, had some water difficulties. We were prepared to truck some water in for them. We actually worked with the state prison, because their water system in Lovelock really malfunctioned. We were prepared to do that. There are a lot of commercial water trucking resources that are available, but we do have a quicker way. We would rather than look at commercial resources, but the Division of Emergency Management is prepared, if needed, to assist any community, at least find the resources or provide through National Guard or other resources to provide at least a temporary fix for them.
If I may?
Yeah. Sure.
And I wanted to get back to Lynn's question, because we did hear about that in California, about the trucking of water. And working for water resources, I was unaware of anyone who was in that situation. Normally we would hear that through, we need to file a change application, get a drill a well fast or something. And I haven't. Are there others? You mentioned those two. Are there other purveyors of water entities out there that are in a similar boat that we should know about?
Just the Walker Lake was the one then, and we worked with
right.
No, the community water.
Oh, okay.
But there are individual wells. Unfortunately, we've heard some of in Fallon, Nevada, that their wells were just too shallow, and there's about 20 of them that in a certain area where they're going to have to refill wells.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm probably out of line in terms of your agenda.
No, that's fine.
I think it kind of falls into this, and that is perhaps one of the interim sector meetings needs to be something that addresses, do we need statutory changes? If so, do we need them quickly? Jason's point just now about people asking for emergency well drilling permits or the emergency ability to deepen a well, those kinds of things may take some kind of statutory action, and we may want to consider that as one of the sectors that is looked at, where we would have a meeting with those folks and then decide whether or not that actually goes to a level that might require even a special session to consider doing something to protect against, because as we've all pointed out here and over again, are we 4 years into a 4-year drought or are we 4 years into a 10-year drought? I know when we went over to the forum that was in California, I think the extension had published something, and I'd love to find it again. I lost it, but at the time I had it and spoke about it over at that forum, that I believe the longest recorded drought in Nevada back in 1906 was 11 years. If we're only 4 years into 11 years, we're going to have some significant issues.
Yeah, I completely agree, and it's actually a perfect segue to the next two topics, the summit and the sector meetings.
Can I make a comment? Speak on Thursday.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just based on my experience with Bill on the Drought Response Committee and also this biweekly conference call I sit on with the Weather Service offices throughout California, Nevada, Southern Oregon, Arizona, and part of Utah. There's a common theme here, that is trying to identify impacts of the drought. And the most basic definition of a drought is that you don't have enough water available the time you need the water to do something. So you have an impact. So for the drought monitor, we're looking for impacts to try and assess whether or not we have assessed the drought condition correctly. And this identification of impacts is for whatever reason, it's a difficult thing to do. We hear about impacts, but there isn't a central collection of the reporting of those impacts. I know NIDAS has tried to, they have a NIDAS system on their website for national level collection of impacts, but it seems like you really have to reach out to a broad sector of folks and agencies to try and start teasing out where all these impacts are. I think if we could make progress on that in this forum, that would be really
Mr. Chairman, can I respond? I think that's great, and I think that's something our office can help with that because, again, we get those applications being filed, and in the remarks you just say, due to the drought, I need to drill this well. My well has gone dry. We get the start cards from the well drillers saying that they need to do a replacement well because the water level has fallen to a point where they can't pump the water. So that we would be happy to work with you on at least our end of it to let you know what we're seeing.
Sure. Doesn't the Farm Services Agency's program, don't those programs also, the insurance programs, don't those also give information about what kinds of effects there have been on agricultural losses, for example?
They do, and we started inviting FSA representatives, as well as people that are out on the range, out of enormous,
like with all
so the BLM has become involved in this. They have people that are out there already assessing the range, but the information isn't getting back to people like me. Well, there are other people like me that are trying to assess these impacts, collect and assess them, and make some kind of decision. And it just seems like it's a really difficult thing. I know we had trouble in the drought response committee.
Sure.
And Mark kind of looked at me when he was saying that and thinking maybe agriculture hits that book. We actually don't. I mean, they end up going to USDA for relief money or help, or they end up going to Jason to drill the well deeper or those kinds of things. They don't come to us. We're the regulatory side, but we're very, very concerned about their viability. So, but they don't come to us for that kind of assistance or impact.
There are other sectors too, though. I mean, it's beyond agriculture and people who need to drill. I mean, I don't know who they might be. The ski industry, for example, or tourism in different parts of the state. I don't know how you get that information, but it seems like there's potentially a fairly big impact on industries like that.
James, well, you're going to be your best.
Yeah, I think maybe what we'll do because like I said, we do have some ideas about hearing from other folks. I think what I'd like to do, since we've been going at it for about an hour and a half, is let's take a 10-15 minute break. Let's come back at 10:45. Let's talk about the summit and then perhaps these interim sector meetings. As I said, we have given some initial thought to those kinds of meetings and who we want to hear from, but certainly want to put it out to the group as a whole to see if it makes some sense. So let's take a, like I said, we're back to 10:45. Hello?
Yes, I was wondering, will you be taking public comment after item 7, or does public comment need to wait till the end of the agenda?
Do you want to provide comment after center?
I would like to just say yes, please.
How
are we going to do with
it? Yes, okay.
Please.
All right. Can I get your name so I can introduce you?
Yes, Judy Gilmore with Utilities Inc.
Okay. Judy, would it make sense to do it? I tend to like to do these before the agenda items. Does it make sense to do it as we get into 7?
Oh, I thought we were ending 7. Okay, I can wait till the end also, whichever you prefer.
Right, so you think we're in 7 right now.
Okay, I'll figure out a way.
Okay, sorry. Thank you.
Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order. I've got a couple of, we've got to finish on a couple things with regard to agenda item 7 before we move to the summit. First was that we had a discussion, but we never took the vote on the basically giving DEM a few extra weeks to hear from the municipal water providers and then providing a draft that can be acted on at the if we do have a July meeting then. So we've had a motion and a second, but that never voted on it. So call for that question. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And then during the break, I was asked if public comment can be provided on this item, and so I said I would. So with that, go to Las Vegas and Judy Gilmore with Utilities, Inc.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me cut in here. I'm the water conservation coordinator for 4 private utility companies, which I hope going forward can be considered as a sector for these for the interim sector meetings. I know we submitted some of the proposals to Mr. Elliott with EMA, and we are a small sector, but we do want to be considered going forward. We've been active in one of our companies just over the hump in Pahrump. We have UICN. The Basin 162 there has had some water issues. We've actively worked with Jason King and the State Engineer's Office to support his workings there. And our president actually sits on the Groundwater Advisory Committee to try to come up with some solutions for the over-allocation issues there. And we hope to be able to put forth that kind of effort for statewide solutions. We have 3 other companies up north, and we just hope you will consider us as a sector to help be part of the solution to the drought solutions and conservation efforts. Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Any questions for Ms. Gilmore? And I'm quite certain we can accommodate that. Okay, so moving to item 8, and again, I think we're going to be talking about item 8 and item 9 a little bit. Obviously, we'll do our best to stay true to the agenda. So the Nevada Drought Summit, those dates have been selected, and these are based on the governor's availability. So there's not any wiggle room on the dates. Obviously, what goes into the summit we could talk about. But the dates themselves will be the September 21st to the 23rd. And I'd like to we have some broad ideas about what the summit would be. It'd be the ability to, some of the discussion we've already had, it'd be the ability to sort of hear from the various sectors, whether it's agriculture, municipal water, business, economic development, environmental, so the idea would be that a lot of information would feed into the summit in advance, so that the summit, when it occurred, would be an opportunity to have some very focused discussions on drought and its effect on various industries. With that, I'd like to see if there's any interest in participating in putting the summit agenda together. I think what I'd like to do is, again, if we do have these sector meetings, is have the ability to take some broad ideas that may exist and turn them into a draft agenda for the forum to look at. So if there's any interest in that, I don't know that I necessarily need to. I mean, if you want to say it on the record, great. If you want to just let me know, that's fine. But what we're looking for is on this topic is to make sure that the dates are known, the 21st to the 23rd. Have a general sense that what they're going to be is the ability to kind of take information from various sector meetings and what's been done to date. John Ensminger gave an example of that, but we'd like to have that statewide, perhaps some best practices in agriculture as an example, and then turn that into an agenda for the summit in September. I realize that was moving pretty fast, but any initial thoughts or reactions to that?
I have an interest in being a part of that planning committee. You're calling for the formation of a planning committee.
So yes.
Tentative. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm tentatively interested.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think that my director would want me to be part of that.
All right. Do you have interest?
I have interest in participating, and certainly to provide some staff support as well if we need it.
That would be great.
Yeah, likewise. I think having DRI involvement and providing information in terms of what tools we have available and what studies we've been conducting.
Well, the goal here, just a point of clarification,
yeah.
To basically we're going to assign a subgroup to bring back an outline to this forum at the July meeting. Is that the goal?
It would be, if we could do it, that'd be great. Yes.
Okay.
July or August, but the sooner the better. And again, this is where it's difficult because the sector meetings, which would be the subject of July and August, are the next agenda topic. But yeah, that would be what we're looking for, is basically to have a sense of what we want to get accomplished in September and what information we need well in advance to make that as useful as possible. And that, like I said, that will span everything that you guys are talking about. I mean, I think it'll span everything from best practices to, are there additional tools, statutory or otherwise, that are needed? Are there things that are in the way that we want to make some progress on?
I would defer to Deputy Attorney General, but unless we're going to post these, we just nominated four people out of eight for a subgroup. Is that a quorum issue?
That would be a quorum issue, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, why don't I do this? Why don't I talk with the folks that have expressed interest and see if there's a way to make sure that, because I do think trying to, that's July is next month, so I understand the interest. Let's see if we can work on putting together a meaningful planning committee that can have a little bit of flexibility in working.
Would you like a motion delegating to the chair the assignment to come up with a draft agenda for the summit for consideration at the July meeting?
I would.
As long as you comply with the open meeting law?
Yes, I would. And Jerry.
I would make a motion.
Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. So with regard to then the sector meetings, then again, I understand going in that we're in the summertime, and again, with the dates in September being set, there isn't a lot of wiggle room here. But I can tell you what I was thinking, and see where this discussion takes me. I was thinking that we would have a meeting most likely in Las Vegas in July and a meeting back here in August with some individual sectors. And, you know, those sectors, I think, like the we would want to have a meeting with like agriculture and municipal water users, and perhaps that could be here in Carson City in August, and then we can perhaps have a meeting with various economic interests, whether it's tourism or whether it's mining or whether it's power, and I was thinking we can perhaps do those sector meetings in July in Las Vegas. And I think because we have the video conference available, the July meeting, whenever we select that date, would probably be in the Sawyer Building, and the August meeting would probably be here, and teleconference, vice versa. Like I said, I think what we want to try to do is use these sector meetings to tease up some things that could be enhanced during the summit, like best practices, like are there specific issues or roadblocks, are there success stories, and so that's sort of what we're thinking. And I could tell you that looking at dates that are available, I would like to have as many of the forum members as possible, but I do understand that it's summer. The dates that the rooms are available and that the chair is available is looking at maybe July 14 or 15 for a Las Vegas meeting, and an August 18 or 19 meeting. And I think if we decide to do the August 18-19 meeting here in Carson, and if it is an ag meeting, I would like to work, we'll work to see if we can video conference out to Elko as well. But does anybody, like I said, we'll look at dates, but any initial reactions to that? Make some sense?
Dates make sense to me, and I don't have issues with them. Televideo, depending on what you find out here, because I don't know. But from our office, we can do Elko and all of the extension office if you wish to do that. We have a large meeting room available in Sparks.
Okay,
if you
well,
wish to do that. And that would go out to all the rural areas for the ag meeting. That might be something that would be appreciated in the rural.
Okay, we'll definitely make note of that. Does anybody have a preference if we can look at July 14, 15, or August 18, 19? Is there any problems with any of those dates?
18.
What's that?
I'm sure 18.
All right.
Yeah,
any
I,
other
I believe I'm out on that during that week.
So you're out that whole week. Okay. How about July in Las Vegas? Any conflicts there?
I'm sorry, I was confused. July is the conflict I have. August, I'm free.
Okay. Great. All right. Yeah, so what I'm proposing is that we have just a one-day meeting with a choice of 2 days in Las Vegas on the 14th or 15th, and that the focus of that sector would be business community, economic development, tourism. That'd be a pretty big meeting, but nonetheless would envision that in Las Vegas. I know that there's a hearing room there, which I believe we can still get. So that's what we're thinking about for one of those days. And then if Doug's got a conflict with the 18th, and perhaps, you know, with a location to be determined, whether it be here or in Sparks, a meeting on the 19th of August, where it would be agriculture and municipal water users.
The 14th is slightly better than the 15th for me, but I can clear the conflict on the 15th.
Well, if nobody else has a problem, then perhaps we can identify July 14th and August 19th. Locations to be determined, but generally speaking, the July meeting will be in Las Vegas and the August meeting will be in Northern Nevada, either here or in Sparks.
You know, as Lynn pointed out, we can use the extension video conferencing facilities not only to reach people in agriculture, but people in municipalities as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I think they're doing that right now through the Nevada Rural Water Association, their monthly trainings, so that it's possible to use those as for the same purpose, but for that, for these different sectors, if you want.
Well, if we can maybe talk with Corey after.
Sure.
And
okay.
Figure out the pluses and minuses of both. But and again, for the members of the audience, these will be public meetings. They will be identified on the website, and obviously locations and times and agendas will be posted.
Mr. Chairman, if I missed it, I'm going back to September 21 through 23rd. That's going to be held in Carson City?
Yes.
Okay.
That is going to be in Carson City.
I know. Okay.
So that's a lot to digest, any thoughts?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, just maybe add to what you've already said.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw the DO for the first time, in my simple mind, what this reminded me of is exactly what Governor Sandoval has just done with the WGA. He traveled around the rest of the United States and he brought in different industries to talk about successes and failures in dealing with the drought so that everybody can learn from them, and then that's all going to be culminated in this report that's due out sometime this month. So I know you're probably ahead of me. I view this as the same thing now, just scale down to Nevada side. We're going to be in Nevada and we're going to hear from these various industries, and let's hear about what is working, what hasn't worked, and we should be very clear, and I know we're all on the same page. This isn't all about a warm and fuzzy feel good come summertime to look at how great we've done. We have done some great stuff, but we also want to hear, and you alluded to these, if there's roadblocks out there, we really want to know about this. We want to know where we're not, you know, doing everything that we can. And I'm hoping that these sector meetings will provide that kind of information that then we can really kind of shine a light on in the summit. So I think these sector meetings are really going to be real important, as important as the summit always, to vet all those issues out. So to me, this is just kind of a scaled-down version of what the Western states did under Governor Sandoval, and that's how I view this process.
I think that was put remarkably well and correct. I think that there's no doubt that there are success stories. We heard some of them. I've heard others, I know, in the ag community as well. So I think we certainly want to talk about those and see what kind of applicability they have elsewhere. But I also think that we have to be realistic with ourselves, that whether we're in the 15th year of drought or the 4th year of drought, we live in a desert. There's a lot of competing interests, and that some of these discussions are definitely due or past due in terms of what are the issues, what are the problems, and what can we do to make it better in terms of ongoing negotiations, ongoing discussions, future changes perhaps, and statutory or regulatory controls. So I think, like I said, I think you put it remarkably well, and I think it's a very compressed time frame, but I know that's by design, because By the end of this season, by the end of the summit in September, and by the end of the report that's due in November, you know, that's basically when people start planning for next year. And I don't view that that will be the end of it by any stretch, but I think there's a pretty heavy lift between now and November. Very aggressive calendar. I guess I thank the four members in advance for their diligence and maybe building on a little bit further on what Jason said, because it's going to be so important and so meaty that these next 4 months are going to be, or 3 to 4 months we're going to be leaning heavily on the four members and perhaps their staff. I know that everybody's busy. I know that I'm busy, and so I know sometimes you have meetings and then, you know, you sort of exhale, and then by the time you realize it, enough, too much time has passed. That, we really won't have that luxury here.
And I think, picking up on that, I guess I have a couple questions just logistically in terms of what we need to do. First, you know, the July 14th meeting is, you know, a little more than a month away. Do we want to, as we did with the summit outline, delegate to the chair to, you know, obviously work with the other four members of the public in identifying, you know, a list of people we should be inviting to this, and, you know, trying to make it as robust as possible. And so then that would be sort of targeted who we can think of to invite and putting the chair on point for that, and then also under item 10 in the executive order itself, I think by July 1, part of what we're supposed to have done is issue additional call for specific information. Should we be putting on the website or whatever other, you know, mediums of communication we can come up with, but basically a call to those industries that if you want to show up on the 14th and give us your, you know, success stories, roadblocks, whatever they may be, you know, get the word out to, I'm focused in on the 14th because it's closer, but I think all the things I'm saying probably apply to, you know, the sector specific meeting on the 19th as well. So that was kind of a lot, and there's no motion in there yet. So.
No, but I think it's good to, I think it's probably, let's have people react to that before we do a motion. But I think those are all good thoughts.
I think that's a really good idea. Again, I think that the success of the summit is going to be predicated on how successful our sector meetings are. So I think a lot of work needs to go into that. And so I would agree with John that I think whether or not we yield to you, Chairman, to pick that subcommittee to organize it, or we take volunteers, I don't have an opinion that way. But I think it's important that we get a group working on that ASAP.
I like the idea of utilizing the website, because this is really, you know, obviously invitations can be made and people can come to meetings, but, I mean, there's a lot of people out there, and while perhaps it's not ideal and maybe there are ways to do outreach, I do think the utilization of the website to gauge interest and participation is a good one.
And I think it gives us the opportunity, if it's substantive enough, you can actually agendize that rather than just having them show up with the ability to do 3 minutes of public comment.
Absolutely. Yeah, the public comment would almost be a fail-safe, but...
Right.
Any other thoughts? Reactions? Anybody feel... All right, watching head nods. So I guess it's a motion.
Okay, I guess what I would move is to delegate to the chair the responsibility for setting the agendas for July 14th and 19th with input from the other forum members and the public via the website. That's my motion.
Is there a second?
I second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Pretty important. Everybody good?
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Is the website currently built for city comments?
The website is currently built. Does it take comments?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are we going to get that up? Will just be wise to let people know about that and they have an access to it?
Yeah.
Well, one thing I can do is send it out to everybody who is part of Extension of the state and ask them to work with the people in their counties to at least explain what it is and urge them to attend if they have an interest in it, if they feel like they want to contribute. I'll be happy to do that.
Can we maybe do that? Can everybody do that? I mean,
certainly to the extent that we can through agriculture,
right.
Yes. And the other thing I think League of Cities, counties, I'm drawing a blank on the name, but each one of them has the ability, particularly for the municipalities and the like, to draw on those. And then probably tourism, we need to get to some.
We can send out last emails to the water professionals statewide. Mr. Chairman, I don't know. Does it make sense to have a a press release of such that talks about this and let the papers pick up if they choose to?
Good idea too.
And offer some public comment.
Yes. Please identify
yourself. Lori Hunt, for the record, senior policy analyst with Governor Sandoval's office. So the website is drought.nv.gov. We have a website there, and we will shortly have a feature where you can sign up for email updates on the website directly. So I think if everyone can direct folks to go there, we'll get that set up today, that form. Right now you can submit a comment or a question, and then we'll add your email to the list. So that feature is there, but we'll get a box on the front page that says sign up here, and that way we can have a master list that we can start assembling. We already have a healthy list from Jason's office and from DEM of folks that we've sent out the request for information to. So hopefully we can start to build that, and then we have a Twitter feed there as well and all that where people will announce the next meetings, and as soon as this meeting is over, we'll announce all of those kind of deliverables and the timeline for that, so we can encourage that participation. So hopefully we all don't have to send out different press releases of this or that, but more of a go here to find out what's happening, so we can move everyone that way. So, I mean, certainly everyone's welcome to do whatever they'd like to do, but we'll have that set up, and then we'll have an email list so that we can send out updates from this entity.
And can we, thanks for that, can we, obviously we're still firming these up, but can we at least put like a save the date sort of thing for the summit in September, because we know those dates, and save the date for, you know, sector meeting?
Yeah, absolutely. The save the dates, we'll put it on the website as soon as we have those dates identified, and if you just did that, I apologize.
So
we'll get those listed up there ASAP and make sure that those, at least, you know, the rough outline of those are up there as soon as possible. We'll also, the summit dates the governor will announce in a couple weeks, right?
Oh, I don't know. We just announced it.
Oh, good.
we announced it here because that was the dates that
sure. Okay.
Available.
No problem. And then, so we'll get all those online right away, and we maybe will do a press release from our office or something, identifying and outlining what those are. Just kind of a bullet point. We had the first meeting of the drought forum and identified these interim sector meetings and the summit at this date.
And I think particularly for the one on the 14th, we can help you, you know, target specific, you know, invitees in Southern Nevada, we can link to our website. We can do the mass media stuff, you know, click Twitter and Facebook, and hopefully get the word out on there that way.
I have a question for Corey. How do we go about making some recommendations for the website? For example, under the science tab, it would be nice to have links to these maps, maybe Doug's shop, where we have maps of the current drought condition, and not just for Nevada, but also the surrounding states, and different types of science information besides what's on there now, which is basically a copy of the state engineer webpage.
Corey Hunt, for the record, I would urge all of you to build. I'll have you. The Division of Emergency Management has been gracious to help set up that website, and so I'll ask that you all work with Bill to identify sections of the. If you see something on the website that you think should be different, as long as there's no conflicting recommendations, please feel free to work with Bill on revising those portions of the website. We just moved it as much as we could together with the information that we had, consulted the magic Google. But if there's things on there that you think need to be on there, it would be more appropriate, by all means. We'd like for that page to be a source where people can go for reference and then get the most relevant information. We get a lot of folks who said, how do I rat out my neighbor for, you know, doing this? And that's not what that website's for. We'll send them to their local water authority or whoever from there. But we'd like to have that as kind of a central repository where we can send information out or refer people to other websites with more relevant or up-to-date information. But, yeah. Any recommendations you have, please let Bill know.
Sure. Put that together.
Great.
I'll put it on email to elicit recommendations as well. How is it working for you, and are there any?
Great. Thanks. Just make sure you don't reply all.
Any other questions for Corey? Thanks.
The hashtag is hashtag NV drought is what we've been using for anyone interested.
All right. Well, that sort of takes us through 9 and perhaps 10. So we've identified the say the summit, the sector meetings, we'll work on the locations. Is there anything else? We go to agenda item 10. Any review of any other action items anybody wants to weigh in on?
I guess a question as much as anything. I think what we delegated to you in advance of July was come up with a draft of the outline for the forum. If it's my understanding is correct, you know, we're going to be still probably coming up with the final summit. We're probably still going to be coming up with the final summit stuff after August 19th because we're going to take some of that sector-specific stuff and be funneling it into that. So long-winded way of getting to, do we need to meet again sometime between August 19th and September 21st? To nail everything down, or maybe it's nailed down and we just need to bless it or whatever it may be.
That's a good question. I guess it couldn't hurt to identify a time to do that now. It's probably, and if we find we don't need it, or
if we don't need it, we can get rid of it. Otherwise, as we have the schedule set right now, we would need to be approving the final summit on the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it could even be teleconference if need be. I mean, I don't know that everybody would have to be in the room, but if we could at least get together and say, yeah, here's the things we pulled out of this, everybody agrees, this is what we're going to put on the final agenda, I think that would be helpful.
Okay. Well,
but you're all simultaneously trying to get the final thing pushed out and get as many people there as possible. So it's probably something you want to do pretty fast after the 19th.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you. I mean, we can either try to, you know, it's a relatively small group. We can try to identify, perhaps a date that following week if we think there's enough time to do that, either for in-person or phone. Or we could do a dual poll, but if we're all here, can people look at their week of the 24th?
The whole week's good for me.
Tuesday, Thursday, 44, 11 a.m.
Okay.
Good with.
Well, a representative one way or another. I don't have the director's calendar, but one way or another, we can participate in that.
All right. Well, how about we block Wednesday the 26th in the morning? With the location to be determined, whether it's face-to-face or phone. That's a good thought. Anything else under item 10?
Just one other thing that we haven't touched on, and we don't know. It may come within the sectors or otherwise, but you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, like the best practices in agriculture, and we had that discussion a bit in California, and the what comes back time again is the technology is out there, but it's really expensive.
Okay.
And the one thing we haven't talked about is financing any of this. How when we get to, I mean, you obviously, John, commented on the fact that your ratepayers stepped up and they're doing things to do what they can. It's not really drought control, but it's how do we mitigate the effect? That's where we're at. But water usage and some of these other things in best practices agriculture include putting in very sophisticated computerized systems that actually look at the ground and tell you this piece of ground here is dry, but this one over here is wet, and as your automated sprinkler system comes around the circle, you want to water more here and less there, and you have to put all that computer control equipment in, and maybe you find that out by flying a drone over the property to get the actual heat picture thermal image that tells you that, and on and on and on. These are things the average farmer's not going to do. I mean, the best practices out there, it'll be nice to talk about it, but if we don't, how do we implement? That's the other thing we haven't really hit on. It's okay, so we come up with some wonderful ideas. What are we going to do to implement those?
Right. So, and I think that's going to be a pretty common, I mean, it's my sense is that we would hear that even in the municipal side either. I mean, mm-hmm. SNWA is very fortunate that it's got great leadership and a large enough ratepayer base that they can handle it. My sense is that same refrain is,
mm-hmm.
I do think at a minimum that would show up in terms of, you know, roadblocks, but perhaps, to go a little bit deeper during these sector meetings is, you know, are there success stories in terms of
funding?
You know, are there success stories or what is the, you know, what would the funding bag look like? And are there loan programs out there? Are there, you know, grant programs out there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and you know, and if you do that, then, you know, if you do find a way to fund it, you know, how do you find a way to make sure that it's in addition to helping whomever, the water user, the ag user, mm-hmm. the business, that the environment itself is positively affected as well.
Or also, how do we
how do we incentivize people to do that in a world in which beneficial use is the basis of measuring the extent of the water right?
Yeah, we've had that discussion.
Yeah.
those are the discussions that we need to have.
And that's a really awkward discussion because I've played in that game specifically,
yeah,
personally. And the game is, you know, you have a water right, and Nevada's law says you must use it, and yet you really don't have a beneficial use at that moment, but whether you like it or not, you're going to pump water.
Yeah.
And those kinds of things really come back, I think, to haunt the whole system.
And
I mean, I understand all of the aspects of it, and every side of it has a positive, but there are negatives as well, and it's really hard to address. So those are things that I think that's a really good point is there may be, that's why I brought up statutory changes, mm-hmm, as well.
No, and I think you were very prescient on that because I think that's exactly right. I mean, I like I said, we've had discussions along those lines. There's no doubt in my mind that there are, like you said, there's good reasons for why all these things came to be. But if you really take a good hard look at where you are now, a fresh evaluation of everything we do is in order.
And I
do see that playing out both in the sector meetings and in the summit itself. I mean, like I said, this is not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy, and there's going to be people that are going to take a look at some of this stuff that we're going to be talking about and be like, it doesn't sound too good to me. But to me, the discussion has to be had.
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, otherwise we're just glossing it over. It feels good, but we're not doing anything.
Right.
And I don't think that's the intent.
No, it's definitely not. Do you want to say?
Yep.
I talked earlier about sort of working backwards from the final report and the summit, and just drilling into this one a little bit more, it seems, you know, if you're sitting there in November, are we aiming at, and I don't know the answer to this right now, are we aiming at, you know, this forum making a recommendation that, you know, you should open up 533 and change this, and this? Or are you aiming at, you know, the governor should, you know, continue the drought forum in place or appoint a different group of people to explore statutory changes to the system, so what will the outcomes be? I don't know where we're going to get to on that kind of a question, but if you work back, you're clearly going to want some, you know, regulatory and financial type people drilling into this at the summit so you could help start answering that question in the final report of what our actual recommendation is. And in order to drill in that, some of we need the right people at the sector meetings to start really articulating and delineating what the roadblocks are.
I totally agree. I mean, I think that's been the gist of everything I've heard here is we need people to come in and tell us what isn't working and what do we have to do to fix it, not come in and just say, well, you know, we've already done all we can do, or because everybody can do more, obviously. Some of it is a great deal. I mean, what you folks have done is incredible. But we really need to try to get to the hard stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think you can almost get overwhelmed with this because, you know, I know right now, I mean, we're not going to get everything, you know.
No.
In a month from now, we're not going to get everybody there that needs to be there. I know that. We're not going to get all of the questions answered. But I mean, the flip side is that if you don't kind of put these kind of very ambitious time frames on, then you sort of lose the value in what we're doing. So, I mean, I guess we all go into this with the understanding that there may be some criticism that, geez, you know, you didn't hear from this person or there's this thing that you didn't evaluate. My answer to that would be that we're gonna do as much as possible between now and September and then the report in November, and it's entirely likely that we'll own the fact that there's more that we either missed by omission or missed because it just came up during the discussion. And that may be, you know, recommendations moving forward. But I do think to your general question of, you know, is this going to be, I think the desire is to actually do as much as possible. But I think there's a notion that there'll be the need to follow up But I don't think it's, I don't think we should set ourselves up that this is just going to be a framing something for for the report that'll be sort of phase two. There'll be a phase two or a phase three, but I think we want to get a lot done.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if we have the mindset for the report that you're going to have, you know, a bucket of, we should do this right now. By the bucket of, we should spend 2016 figuring out, you know, some other things to do as well. That is almost inevitable that you're going to be divided between those two.
In my experience, when you do that, these are the things we should do right now, you generally open the door to a whole lot of people who didn't participate.
Yes.
And I think that's a really good thing. And that's why I do think we should have a list of things that say, these are things we ought to do right now, because then people suddenly jump up and go, wait a minute, that's going to affect me. Up till now, I didn't think you guys were going to bother me. But that's going to affect me. And that's when you finally start getting some real participation. Because it's hard to do. Everybody's busy. I mean, you've made the point very well. Everybody's busy. Everybody's sitting out there saying, I'm dealing with it the best I can. Now, I don't have time to go do that. But when somebody finally says, this is what we intend to do, they open up and say, well, wait a minute. And that's when you really accomplish it.
Yeah, like I said, and I don't think there's any fear. I mean, I think that there'll be a level of criticism that comes with this if you endeavor to go into affecting people. But I think we're going to try to do it in a way that is, you know, transparent and public. And it's a discussion that's, it's not overdue, it's due. And so criticism comes from that, it does.
I agree.
Any other thoughts on agenda item 10 before we move to public comment? All right. Seeing that, I'll see if there is left. Adrian, it's just you and just two of you, huh? Anybody there want to make public comment?
Nope, no more comments.
All right. Well, thanks for being there.
Thanks for having us.
We have one, at least one public comment in Carson. Is there anybody else that... Sir, before you get started, I'll just ask you to identify yourself, state your name.
Yes. Although people don't understand me, I lost my voice a couple of days ago, so it's very hard for me to speak. But my name is Glenn Colby. I'm the State Director of the Farm Service Agency of the USDA. We are the producer agency of the USDA. We deal directly with farmers and ranchers with loans and disaster programs, largely centered around drought. I'm also here representing two other sister agencies of the USDA, USDA Rural Development and NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And all three of us have worked very closely with Bill and his office, you know, through the last 3-4 years of drought. And he attends our meetings, we attend his, and that's been a very, very good working relationship. I first want to say I really support the idea of your drought summit. We support that, we support this committee, we support the governor's office and his efforts to do that. From my perspective, I would like to ask, you know, a couple things about this, maybe bring up some points up. I'd like to kind of know your target audience or audiences. For example, if you're going to have just farmers and ranchers, which I doubt, I think you're probably looking at a broad spectrum. Mm-hmm. But if you were looking for just farmers and ranchers, that would enable me to help you, you know, get, you know, encourage and support farmers and ranchers to attend. So that would be good just to see what target audience. Also, too, you know, there hasn't been a drought forums, I guess, in the state in the last several years. Mark and the Cooperative Extension has had a lot of drought forums, and a lot of us, USDA agencies, have attended those, and they've been very productive. I think one of the things you may want to consider is what would people find in your drought summit that they have not found in Mark's drought summit that he's had for the last couple of years. Just a word of advice, because, you know, we've done this for a couple of years, and sometimes it's a peak or repeat, but, you know, just the work is nice. As far as some of the objectives, you know, I really like the idea of best practices, you know, drought assistance. You know, people are always looking for that. Even though we try our best with our outreach, people are always looking for drought assistance. Drought planning, maybe something you want to talk about, you know. Remember, the point is this is the fourth of the 11th year of trials or wherever, so we should be planning harder and more diligently, you know, for jobs in the future. And, you know, if the job goes into 2016, what can we expect from the state or the federal government or from whatever? Well, I think in closing, I want to say, as far as the format, I really like the format you've had. The governor's office has had maybe email ad conferences where you have like a panel of 5 or 6 people. Maybe someone introduced them. That has always worked well, I found. It gets a lot of interaction from the audience to the panel. The panel members also learn a lot about each other. And it's always been very successful. And I really would encourage that. So anyway, that's my say on that. So, thank you for that.
Great. Early before you leave, are there any questions for Clint? And I think they're good suggestions. Thanks. Anyone else? All right. Well,
we'll
be good. I can't make a motion.
Oh, yeah. I want to try to
use that. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. All right. We'll be in touch, folks. Thanks.